This was the excuse that they were not appointing because they were thinking of bringing in a full-time chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery, and they weren't making any other temporary visiting attending appointments. But the truth was that no Jew had ever received an appointment in the Department of Surgery at the University of Pittsburgh up to that time. And in fact, my preceptor, prior to my leaving Pittsburgh and for my advanced training, was David Kostkoff. And though he had an appointment in the University of Pittsburgh, it was not in surgery, it was in psychiatry. He could not get an appointment. He had a PhD as well as an MD and had set up a laboratory of some significance and was head of the hospital at Montefiore as the medical chief, and he could not get an appointment in neurosurgery at the University of Pittsburgh. But he was very interested in psychiatry, as I think we discussed earlier, and because of that, he got an appointment in the Department of Psychiatry. So this was what one, as a Jew, faced in dealing with the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. The next few years brought some development in my practice. I was able then to bring in enough patients to do some surgery. I brought new surgery to Montefiore Hospital that had not been done before, such as cerebral aneurysm surgery of the brain. Also, surgery of arteriovenous malformations of the brain, and also, as I mentioned earlier, the new field of a carotid endarterectomy for transient strokes. During those next few years, I was doing a lot of driving, a lot of traveling, going to outlying hospitals in order to get referred patients. The competition for patients in Montefiore Hospital was rather intense. Dr. Kostkoff, who was the other Jewish neurosurgeon in Pittsburgh, had a neurologist working with him, and they had a growing practice before I arrived, which encompassed most of the Jewish doctors. There were a few Jewish doctors who jumped ship and came to my aid and my side, but they were in the minority, so I had to develop practice in periphery around Pittsburgh. However, during this period of time, there were a lot of changes taking place. I mentioned earlier that the Montefiore Hospital was in a state of flux with regard to its relationship with the university. So it was with this in the background that I became involved in some of the political activities of the staff, became involved as a participant, and I mentioned that and discussed that earlier. Also at this time, I was asked by the then neurologist of Allegheny General Hospital, and this was about 1964, if I would be interested in coming to work at Allegheny General Hospital. I am proud to report that in my history of my life that I did not accept that invitation except by performing what I consider to be a must in behavioral mechanics in medicine. And I said I would be delighted to come, but I would have to be invited by the proper person. And that proper person would have to be the chief of surgery, and particularly the head of the division of neurosurgery. Now, true, there was not much neurosurgery at Allegheny General at that time. But there still was some, and there still was a neurosurgeon who was practicing there, and I did not think it was fair to bring somebody in to compete with him without his at least general approval. It turned out that the Allegheny General Hospital was a sadly neglected hospital up to that date. It had a very wealthy board of directors and a lot of money, but a very bad staff. The neurosurgical department consisted of the neurosurgeons who were at the university, and if they were called, they would come, do a case, and leave, and that was their total contribution to the development of neurosurgery at LAE General Hospital. And that was, those neurosurgeons were Dr. Stuart Rao and his associate, Jerry Grunickle. So, by God, they called me on the telephone, shocked me. I never thought that would happen, because knowing what I knew about the university, relationship to Jews, inability of Jews to get on the surgical staff, etc., 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 I never thought that would happen. I learned, they asked, we had a meeting at that time. Every Saturday morning, the neurosurgeons of the community would meet at a different hospital. It would one time be at Mercy, one time be at Presbyterian, one time be at Children's. Notice it was never at Montefiore. But at any rate, I went to all those meetings and participated in the discussions. After one of those meetings, and I think this was about 1963, 2 years after I arrived here in town, Dr. Rao came up to me and said, we would like to meet with you. Would you mind having a cup of coffee with us? We went to the hospital coffee shop, and Dr. Grenigal and Dr. Rao said, Lay, would you like to do practice neurosurgery at Allegheny General Hospital? And I said, I would love to. And they said, well, we would love to have you take over that hospital. That was the highest compliment I had ever received in my life, realizing that they had associates that they could have sent there. I'm not sure if they were just dumping it on me because they didn't want it, didn't have any use for it, but nonetheless, I took it as a compliment. I thanked them very much, and I informed the neurologist who had invited me that I indeed would come to Allegheny General practice, but I hesitated in making a full commitment because I was still active at Montefiore Hospital. I was still going to Greensburg and Jeanette. I was driving back and forth 3 or 4 times a week to Greensburg. At any rate, I did start to work there, and they started to refer a certain number of cases from within the hospital, but I did not personally bring cases from outside to that hospital. I was still taking them to Montefiore Hospital. This went along for a couple of years, and I'm not sure exactly of the time, but in late 60s, my practice in Greensburg started to die off because they were struggling to get their own neurosurgeon, mm-hmm. and when they did, the referrals to me slowed down. Mm-hmm. It became obvious to me that I had to concentrate more, and I did not want to be running around to different hospitals. I had to concentrate more on the hospitals that I had in town. So I then began to limit myself to Montefiore and Allegheny General Hospital. Allegheny General Hospital began to take up more and more time. It was becoming somewhat busier. At the same time, Montefiore Hospital was going through all these gyrations about the full-time system, which I've discussed in another tape, and it was about 1972 that the full-time system hit in neurosurgery. The university got a full-time neurosurgeon, and he brought in a full staff, bounced all those people who had been on the staff off the staff, and also brought a full-time neurosurgeon into Montefiore Hospital, which was part of the package. As he said to me, it fell into my lap, I didn't ask for it, and he apologized. So it was made clear to me right from the beginning that there was not going to be a place for me there if I did not want to be a full-time employee of the system. And I was told one day that my operating room was being confiscated, the one I had used for those years, by the new full-time chief of neurosurgery, and I was also told that I couldn't use it the next day because he was planning to do an experimental baboon operation in my operating room on my operating day. So that was the first blow, and then the second came when I got called one day in my office by the resident, and the resident said, Dr. Kessler, we have to cancel your operation for tomorrow because the chief has another case that he wants to do. I realized that I had no security, no promise, and no prospects in this environment. from that point on, which was approximately 72, I then no longer admitted any patient of mine electively from the peripheral hospitals who were patients referred to me anywhere but Allegheny General Hospital. It was really then at Allegheny General Hospital, the beginning of the 70s, that I began my very prosperous, very successful, and very rewarding practice of neurosurgery. I became extremely active in the staff. I must say that with all of the history of anti-Semitism of Allegheny General Hospital, and there was much of that, I found very little of it. There was some, and I'm aware of that, when it came to elected offices, they were very hesitant to turn things over to me. But I was elected year in and year out to the executive committee. I did have an impact in making demands on how to improve the hospital, and some of the things that I contributed were, for example, number one, floor specialization. Prior to my arrival there, a patient who was admitted with a brain tumor was placed on the same floor as a patient who might be admitted with a stomach ulcer. There was no segregation of patients according to diseases. It was the same in the operating room. I was strongly influential in insisting on nurse specialization. When I first began to work there, there was no nurse who was willing to scrub with me. There was a fight to stay away from my operating room because my demands were great. I was intense and demanding. I insisted that if they weren't going to have a specialized nursing system in the operating room, that I would, every day I went through this, I'm going to take the patient out of here and not come back. So I was fortunate in being able to project this image of demanding the best, because simultaneous with my development in neurosurgery at Allegheny General was a heart surgeon who became chairman of the Department of Surgery at about the time of my arrival. His name is George McGovern. And George McGovern is a wonderful man of great talent, great ability, but had one weakness. He would fight for anything, providing it's what he wanted. And it happened to be that these are things that he wanted as well. So between the two of us, we were able to develop at Allegheny General one of the highest level subspecialty hospitals in this part of the country. So the nurse that treated you, the nurse that operated on you, and so forth, was somebody who was specially trained to do just that. It was no longer catch as catch can. It was therefore possible, under these circumstances, for me to develop first-class operating room scenario and scene with highly trained people, highly trained assistants, orderlies, x-ray technique procedures with subspecialty x-ray people, which, by the way, was pretty good at Montefiore, but they were people that I taught and not people that had been previously trained to do those specialties. At Allegheny General, at first this was slow in developing, but finally we got x-ray specialists. As a matter of fact, there are three people at Allegheny General today, now there are four, who do nothing but neurology and neurosurgery with regard to imaging procedures. I was able to develop a specialized care of head injuries, for which I eventually received a patent. And what is called the padded enclosure for the care of the comatose patient. I was able to develop that because we developed there a head injury service, which was quite extensive. And as a matter of fact, at the time that we developed the new trauma system in Pennsylvania, which I'll speak of very briefly shortly, we were already at Allegheny General seeing somewhere in the neighborhood of 250 to 300 head and spine injuries per year. I then also developed, because of my special interest, the technique called intravascular or intraluminal manipulation of the cerebral circulation. And as a matter of fact, though I was the first one in the world to write about this in 1969 and developed it at Allegheny General Hospital.
Intraluminal what?
Intraluminal.
Luminal.
Luminal. Vascular procedures. I was recently honored at Allegheny General by their annual vascular cerebral vascular conference and asked to make the closing comments, and every speaker that got up to speak about their particular subspecialty mentioned something that I had contributed to them or to their work. So that it was a great opportunity for me in those years there. I was able to do this because I had complete run of the department. I had support of the hospital and the administration, and I was able to function in an executive capacity on the administrative staff. However, nothing is ever perfect forever, and as we got busier, they began to make great demands on me to develop a larger department. I was then 60 years old, and at that point had made the decision that I was not particularly happy with some of the new administrative developments, particularly with regard to the care of the trauma patient. Now, let me just step back a little bit and say that in about the mid, well, let's say the early 80s, I guess it was just the beginning of 80, when Jimmy Carter was president, the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare had asked the American Medical Association what would be the thing we could do most to save young lives. There were many lives being lost in due to drunk driving and accidents, motor vehicle accidents. And he was told that if they put money into trauma service, taking care of the traumatized, road traumatized patient, that much could be done to contribute to the health and welfare of the country. So they put a lot of money into this and asked the American College of Surgeons to organize a plan for the care of the traumatized patient. Each state was therefore asked to function in this way, and a plan was set up whereby courses were given, hospitals had to be designated for ambulances before ambulances could bring patients to them who were traumatized. In other words, the whole system was organized on a statewide basis. Allegheny General was the most advanced, and we therefore quickly became the trauma center for this area. We acquired a helicopter, and developments went on. I happened to be on the state committee for development of the trauma services. But at the same time, we also got a new chief of trauma. That person, surprisingly, just came into my life at a time when everything was going along well and really caused me a lot of aggravation. I could not agree with his method of handling patients, particularly head injured patients or spine injured patients. We were constantly at each other's throat. And since he was chief of trauma and he had control of the residents who were taking care of the trauma patients, I was not able to exercise my influence and found my ideas, which had been working so swimmingly, suddenly being ignored. This was very hard for me to take. It was very difficult for me to walk into a room and see a patient being treated in a way that in which I did not approve. It caused me a great deal of daily anguish, so that when in 1983 about, it was discussed with me about bringing in more neurosurgeons, I then had two neurosurgeons besides myself on the staff, and building up the department and so forth, I suggested that we ought to look for a new chief of the department. And the reason I did that is because I knew that I, as the old chief, would never be able to get the new concessions that a new chairman would require. I know Howard understands this. But the only way to get neurosurgery on a first-class footing in this administrative setup was to bring in somebody new who would make his demands before he arrived and then would be able to do what he did. And exactly what happened, we brought in a new chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery. He came to this house to talk to me. I told him exactly what he had to demand before he accepted the job. The administration called me and said, if you're going to step down, this man wants the job, what do we have to offer him to get him? And I told him, told the administrator exactly the same thing. They gave it to him. He came. I was out. But
what
the hospital, Joe Maroon. M-A-R-O-O-M. I managed to stay out of his hair, but to continue to practice for several years. My practice, however, declined as expected because I did not wish to beat the bushes or go elsewhere, and he brought in subspecialists in neurosurgery. He really did a fantastic job of developing the Department of Neurosurgery. As I bragged, when I arrived the first year at Allegheny General Hospital, we did 40 neurosurgical cases. When I left, we had done 550, which was an 11-fold increase in neurosurgery. He now brags that he has brought the level of neurosurgical practice up to 2,500 neurosurgical cases a year. It is now the largest single hospital department of neurosurgery in the country. So apparently, he was the right choice, and I was right to step down when I did. I'm not that kind of a promoter, and I could not do what he does. He's a superb operator in that sense, and a superb, darn good surgeon as well. We get along very well. I'm now professor emeritus. The younger people, he's brought in many. We have now 15 neurosurgeons on the staff. They treat me with great deference, great respect. They ask me for advice in their various operations. And for an old fellow, these are the highest compliments that can be paid. As I mentioned earlier, they are planning a commemoration to me this year, and I'm very flattered by that. In 1988, Allegheny General, after much trouble with the University of Pittsburgh, which never ceases. I must step back in talking about my career. When I was at Allegheny General, and when we had the full-time system at the University of Pittsburgh, it became obvious to the new chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery at the University of Pittsburgh that his residents were not going to pass the boards, because he didn't have enough variation and depth in teaching talent. So he invited those of us who had not been active to become active, and I then received my first appointment at the University of Pittsburgh as a professor.
What year?
That was, I believe that was about the mid-60s, perhaps, 67, something of that sort. By 1977, thereabouts, I was made a full professor, a clinical professor at the University of Pittsburgh. My chores were simple. I had to show up for meetings. Teaching meetings were held every Wednesday, which I did, and make comments and give advice and give a lecture once in a while, and that I did. Of course, these are kind of honorary positions for which one does not get paid, but nonetheless, all academic clinicians covet these kinds of positions, so and I was no exception. However, in spite of my connection with the University of Pittsburgh and others too, as a matter of fact, my immediate senior chief was the chairman of the overall Department of Surgery, as I mentioned, George McGovern. He said to me, "Lade, this is ironic. I've been asked to write a letter of recommendation for you to become a full professor at the University of Pittsburgh when I'm not even a full professor." This is the kinds of problems that we were having with the University of Pittsburgh. And because of that, finally, in 1987, the board of directors of Allegheny General Hospital saw their way toward developing a new medical school in Pittsburgh. And in 1988, the new medical school was formed, and I was made a full professor of that medical school.
The medical school is
called Medical College of Pennsylvania and Hahnemann. Allegheny General has taken over Hahnemann College.
This is
called the Allegheny Campus. Mm-hmm. Students come here for their clinical years, and they're there for their primary years. So it is a combined effort of the three operations, Hahnemann, Medical College of Pennsylvania, and the Allegheny Hospital called the Allegheny Campus. My first appointment as professor, I was made full professor right from the outset, and that's not a clinical professor, that's full professor, and also senior clinical advisor. I functioned in that capacity until the present time, and on January the 1st of this year, I retired from surgery. I'm now doing only teaching, doing some paper writing, and doing some medical legal consultation and second opinion consultation. I work half-time about, or maybe a little more some weeks, a little less other weeks, but I am enjoying that and enjoying my relationship with the medical school, and now I'm referred to as Professor Emeritus. Because of the developments, we are now developing a neurosurgical teaching program, a residency program, which will begin July 1995, and this will be a wonderful opportunity for me to teach, to have play a role. I've been asked to do that by the now head of the department, Dr. Maroon, and I plan to continue in that sphere. My other sphere of medical legal consultation is a very big area of practice these days. There's a lot of lawsuits, particularly malpractice suits against doctors, and lawyers need to have honest, sound opinions as to the validity and veracity of the claims. They don't always like what they hear, and of course there are many doctors who don't always give what I consider to be honest opinions, rather tell lawyers what they like to hear. These days it is so expensive to carry out a lawsuit that it is impossible for a law firm to continue to do it if they don't have a reasonable lawsuit to carry out. And conversely, it's impossible for an insurance company law firm to defend a lawsuit if it isn't worth defending. So they need sound opinions. And this is what I've been doing to a large extent recently. I still see a few patients, some of my old patients, and if they need surgery, I arrange for that to happen too through some of the younger men at the hospital. I was asked about how medicine has changed during this period of time. There's no question that generally the practice of medicine is not pleasurable. And one of the reasons that I've decided to step down from practicing surgery was because I was losing so many patients to what we call the HMO system. If you don't comply and did not comply at the very beginning in jumping into HMOs and working with HMOs, then it's too late to do so. And an old specialist like myself was not necessarily welcome. Their prices were extremely restrictive, and they eliminated hospitals that charged for integrated, highly integrated services. So so that for years HMOs did not cooperate with hospitals like Allegheny General. They went to hospitals that could give them bargains. And of course, it's the old story, for bargains you get bargains. I had several times during my experience when I was busy in practice and having patients come from the tri-state area that they would come to me and say, we would like you to be the neurosurgeon for our HMO, and I would agree to it, but then we couldn't make a deal with Allegheny General Hospital. So that it gradually eliminates certain practices. HMO gives you a choice of physicians, but they're talking about primary care physicians. You have a certain limited choice. You can't say, I want Dr. A, unless Dr. A happens to be on their panel. It's panel physicians. Now, they also will not send you to Dr. Kessler for neurosurgical consultation unless Dr. Kessler is listed. When it comes to something like neurosurgery, they may have one neurosurgeon for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of patients.